It is the duty of Christians to seek peace with all men on principles of righteousness. In accordance with the spirit and teachings of Christ, they should do all in their power to put an end to war. The true remedy for the war spirit is the gospel of our Lord. The supreme need of the world is the acceptance of his teachings in all the affairs of men and nations, and the practical application of his law of love. Christian people throughout the world should pray for the reign of the Prince of Peace. So, would it be wrong for a person in our denomination or otherwise to serve in the military? No, biblically speaking, it's not. In fact, if we don't have Christians serving in the military, then what's the military going to be like? it'll be all pagans and very unchristian-like. And so the sword has been given to the government to keep the peace. And so it is our responsibility to seek peace as civilians, and if we serve in the military, to do it under, you know, the authority of the law, not to go outside of that. And I think also in this would also condemn mob violence, wouldn't it? You know, having an attitude of gathering together with a mob to try to overthrow and things of that nature. We're really supposed to seek peace, and we're supposed to do it by the propagation of the gospel, correct? So, reason why I kind of, you know, threw those three variables in there is, you know, we actually saw a time not too long ago whenever we had riots going on all over this nation, you know, and they were burning down cities. What was the position of us as Christians in that? Really to bring the gospel to bear, right? To bring the gospel into the situation. You know, in Ferguson, whenever a lot of this stuff went down even earlier, back during President Obama's administration, there were church groups and even like First Baptist Ferguson that literally went out into the streets and tried to, you know, relay the gospel during that time. And they set up a tent where people could come and receive prayer. Did they get a little flack at times? A little bit. But God actually kept them very safe. It was interesting how it went down. We actually went up and prayed at First Baptist Ferguson just after that had happened. A little bit after that happened, there was a lot of stories about people who had gotten saved out of that mob. I mean, it was a crazy deal. And you could tell the speaking a little extra reason into it wasn't really going to go very far. You couldn't go in and reason with them. But I can tell you the gospel has power, and that's the power to bring peace in the long run. And so that's the duty of us as Christians to seek that peace. So, and to do it on principles of righteousness. And that's the one that sometimes gets abandoned as well in this new wokeism type, woke culture. People are almost like throwing, you know, the principles of righteousness out to try to seek peace. You know, we need to look to the Bible and see Christ's righteousness to be our basis for peace. And the Prince of Peace being that primary one. So let's go ahead and look up the scriptures for this. Isaiah 2:4. Matthew 5:9, and then 38-48. Thank you. also Matthew 6:33. Okay, and 26:52. Boy, that's an important verse, isn't it? I think that if we put our faith in the strength of a sword, it'll be the way that we go down as well. So it's an interesting. What's the context of that verse? That was whenever they came to get Jesus, wasn't it? And Peter took up his sword and tried to chop the guy's head off, and all he wound up hitting was his ear. And all right, let's look at Luke 22:36. And that's speaking of kind of preparation for that whole moment as well. So what did he mean by that? He who has no sword, buy one. He just, we just learned from him, if we live by it, we're going to die by it, right? And I think in this particular verse, that sword was going to be needed for that particular incident, if you look at the culmination of it all, because he talks about being numbered among the transgressors. Look at verse 38. Yeah. And so if we back up and we go ahead and read, the first verse in that group was 36. And so he said, if you don't have a sword, sell his garment and buy one. For I say to you, that which is written must also be accomplished in me. And he who is numbered with the transgressors, for the things concerning me have an end. And so they said, look, here are two swords. And he said to them, it is enough. It's enough. That's going to accomplish the task which they were needed for. He wasn't telling them to get a sword so they could try to defeat the group that was coming against him, because that wasn't the point, was it? What would have happened if they'd have wiped out the group that came against them? It would have fulfilled his mission, and it would have been totally the opposite, and it would have just, it wasn't the purpose. You know, God has a bigger purpose for us than just that one battle that it might look like is before us. Let's look at Romans chapter 12. Everybody hear that? All right. If it's possible, as much as depends on us, that we should live peaceably with all men, right? Because vengeance is God's. Let's look at 13:1-7. and then 14:19. All right, Hebrews 12:14. Pursuing peace with everyone. All right, and then James 4:1-2. So this all speaks of being aggressive toward one another, right? I don't think that in this that we would conclude from this that no one has any right to, you know, to be able to defend themselves at all. We don't see that in these verses we're really talking about that. It's just we don't propagate the gospel with it. We don't, you know, we don't try to force society to change with the sword. We don't, you know, that's not our purpose in this. As Christians, our number one purpose is to pursue peace and just to pursue the propagation of the gospel. You know, why our nation, you know, and I'm a full proponent of the Second Amendment, but it wasn't the Second Amendment that made us a great nation throughout all these years. It was the fact that we had a Christian heritage that made us great for all these years. And we're beginning to lose that because we're beginning to turn away from that Christian heritage. And so I don't think that, you know, just everybody arming themselves and making sure that we mow down anybody that seems to be out of line would be the way to regain it either. I mean, we're going to regain it through the propagation of the gospel. So let it be our primary peace purpose to promote peace with others, seek peace with others. Any thoughts or questions before we move into the next section? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. There's other religions that try to propagate themselves through, you know, warlike means and through the weapons. That's Islam. That's the reason why it can be very fast growing, but not very deep seated. You know, they'll come in and take over a whole area and they just threaten everybody. If you don't convert, you die. And this is why I hate Christians so much, because a true Christian can't deny Jesus. And they can't, if they kill us, then we know where we're going. And so we're a pretty hard bunch to persuade otherwise. And so it really burns them up because they can't change us that way. And we do need government structures to keep them back. But if you notice, you know, the church in these countries where they find that, you know, taking up arms against the Muslim people would not work. And it's not the way to resolve the conflict. In fact, the conflict would, you know, just gets even more out of hand at that point. I remember hearing somebody from First Baptist Bethlehem preach one time, and he was the pastor there. In Bethlehem, they just have a lot of conflict, you know, because they've got a lot of Palestinians there, which a lot of them are Muslims, and there's just a lot of hatred. And he said that they have deacons in their church, and their deacon's primary purpose is to put out the fires during the service. They throw like bottles with gasoline on a wick on them, and they break them through the windows. And he said they don't even stop the service for it. They have buckets of water stationed with each one of these deacons, their servants, and the deacons just go over and very kindly put out the fire while the preacher continues to preach. So they have a guard at the door that only allows in the people that are seeking peace and things of that nature. So I mean, they do have church safety in mind, but they're not going to go away. They're not going to leave. They're not going to quit being Christians. They're not going to go out and kill all the people that seem to be their enemies either, because where would we be sending them? Straight to hell. So they just seek peace, and they continue to do what they're called to do. Same way in Syria, when a lot of the battle was going down in Syria with ISIS, there were churches that stayed and worshiped and continued to receive people. And there were some awesome stories of how God protected them as well. This one church actually had a radio antenna on it, and they knew that they were, you know, putting out their preaching and their services, And so they were slated. I mean, they were definitely a target. And they tried to take that church out, I don't know how many times. They would send in, you know, lob in missiles on them and things of that nature, but they always missed. And they didn't miss every other building, but they missed that building. And they would, there were huge craters all around that church, but the church just continued to serve and pray. And, you know, and it wasn't that no Christians died. Some were martyred during that time. But it was interesting how God protected certain areas of worship there in the midst of all that. God can protect us. He's able to. And it's not a bad idea to have a good plan in case, you know, an intruder does get into a church. And that way we can seek that peace with that person as well to stop them before they hurt everyone and then wind up having even more problems, you know. And, I think we just need to be well-rounded in our attitude toward that. Our church got broke into one time and really, they pretty well cleaned out anything that was of worth in here. And, you know, we sought peace with that individual, and even put a write-up in the paper of how we forgave them, and he missed the bigger treasure. That was the gospel. Come back and, you know, become part of the service. If he'd have come on Sunday morning, he'd have gotten the real treasure, you know, and proclaimed that. Well, they wound up catching him because he robbed another church up the road on the same night, and they sent somebody over to witness to him, so they had the same heart. Not a heart of vengeance, but a heart of peace. The individual wound up going off to prison for a little while and came back out. And unfortunately, he went back to his old life and he went down to Roy's gas station down in Bridgewoods. I think it was before it was called that. I don't know. But he went in to rob the place and got shot in the stomach. And I'm not sure he survived that one. It was a really sad situation. But we sought peace with him. We really did. You know, we didn't want to see him continue in that way. Let's go ahead and look at religious liberty. So that's section 17. God alone is the Lord of the conscience. And he has left it free from the doctrines and commandments of men which are contrary to his word or not contained in it. Church and state should be separate. The state owes to every church protection and full freedom in the pursuit of its spiritual ends. In providing for such freedom, no ecclesiastical group or denomination should be favored by the state more than others. Civil government being ordained of God, it is the duty of Christians to render loyal obedience thereto in all things, not contrary to the revealed will of God. The church should not resort to the civil power to carry on its work. The gospel of Christ contemplates spiritual means alone for the pursuit of its ends. The state has no right to impose penalties for religious opinions of any kind. The state has no right to impose taxes for the support of any form of religion. A free church in a free state is the Christian ideal. And this implies the right of free and unhindered access to God on the part of all men, and the right to form and propagate opinions in the sphere of religion without interference by the civil power. That's definitely been challenged a few times, where the state has tried to get involved in the affairs of church. Now, it doesn't say in any way there that Christians shouldn't be in public policy or in any kind of public positions. Obviously, you know, we should. What that's saying is that the government's sole responsibility to the church is to protect their ability to exist freely. And the government wants to get outside of that role sometimes, don't they? We basically exist in America as far as our convention, and our governing structures, and this is where we meet. But we are worldwide in our outreach and our existence of churches. but they basically will cooperate through our convention that is headquartered here in the United States. So I don't know if that answers it, but it... Yeah, the church still pretty much takes that stance even in those areas where they operate there. They are proclaiming that we are kind of a separate entity here. Now, do they still have to deal with whatever government structure that they have in there? Absolutely, but it is their ideal situation to try to promote the government to go in this direction as well. So, yeah, that's true. So if the governments aren't involved, or if the Christians aren't involved in government, then we'd be giving it over to people that believed elsewhere. Other ways that would in eventually be kind of a self imploding, destructive, situation. So let's go ahead and look up some of the scriptures here. We're going to start with Genesis 1:27. All right, so who's the creator? God, not government, right? Sometimes the government acts like that they are the top. And I think that why this is important is, do you realize that socialistic and communistic governments have to be like God to the people? That's where that whole entity... Don't let anyone fool you, because we have a strong push in our country right now to push us towards socialistic and almost, eventually communistic type of an attitude. Communism is only socialism on steroids. Socialism, they just really haven't taken out the gun to take your money yet, but it's there. And communism is when they just go ahead and unveil the gun. And they're going to take it from you by force. Socialism is how it starts much of the time, and then ultimately it resorts to the force of what we see to be like communistic regimes. And there is nowhere in the world that communism has ever existed in any form that they didn't try to snuff out the church, and generally first, because the church flies in its face, because it says, no, you will not be God. The Lord Jesus Christ is God. He is the one whom we serve. And so we've kind of got a push right now that is saying, oh no, communism's just never been done right yet, but it could be. And we even have people in our own government that are saying, boy, China is actually a role model to us. China is one of the worst persecutors of the Christians that has ever existed. And one of the worst, on war crimes and things of that nature as well. The way they have treated their people in civil, in starving out millions of people in their conception there as their government. And you see the way their leader right now is just really being very, very hateful and violent to the church. Why is that? Because by its very nature, it's a godless regime. And it demands to take the place of God. And Karl Marx himself actually, had dedicated his book that he wrote on communism to Satan. And it wasn't a joke when he made his dedication in there. He was a pure Satanist. He grew up in a Christian home, but he turned away. And so we really need to understand that there's a major... divide between those two worldviews. And so let's look at Genesis chapter 2:7. Isn't it that awesome? I like it that they're starting it out there. I mean, they're just starting it out with creation. So if he created us, then he has authority over us, and it's him that we should worship and serve, right? All right, Matthew 6:6-7. So that's in your personal relationship with God. Government's not involved in that, are they? We should have freedom to do that. They skipped over all the rest of the Old Testament, but I want to bring up a guy in the Old Testament that was an excellent citizen to his king, a pagan king, and it was Daniel. Daniel was an excellent servant to his king. His king was pagan. He actually went through a whole line of kings, all of them pagans. But I will tell you, he never went against his relationship with God to do that. In fact, when the edict came down that his three friends and all of them should bow down to this idol, they wouldn't do it. His three friends got thrown into the fiery furnace. And whenever it came time that another king got tricked into making an edict that they should pray to no one, you know, except to their gods, you know what? Daniel continued to pray. It didn't take them long to catch him breaking that edict either. They actually just followed him in because they knew he'd do it three times a day. And they came back and they said, "Oh, king, you need to go see this. Your favorite guy, Daniel, is doing it right now." You know what? God protected him. Daniel in the lion's den. That's why we have that account. And so we need to put God first and put our relationship with him first, and it'll actually make us better citizens. So let's look. I don't know if that. Yeah, that'd be 6:24. Yeah, let's look at 16:26. All right, that's a good question. Obviously, it would not be good to exchange your gain the whole world, lose your soul, or lose your life, right? All right, let's look at 22:21. Yeah, that's when my friend said, "Boy, if that means we needed to pay our taxes to Caesar, I'm glad he isn't alive anymore." I think it means the governing institution, because actually Julius Caesar wasn't alive then either. It was everyone who came under that title. And you know, the way that that's worded, I heard Jack Hibbs was teaching on that one day. And he said, if you really look at it in the nuance of the way that it was written, it's kind of talking about that God has authority over it all, and therefore we should give to the government, because that is even part of God's realm. And so we give to the government and we give to God their proper amounts, because ultimately God's over everything. And so he's ultimately our king, right? And he's telling us that it is right for us to support God's, the ones that he has put in place. Was that government a righteous government in that day? Not at all. And yet, Christ, you know, said that we should still be honest to it. Yes? Mm-hmm. I know. We are created in the image of God, so the whole person is. And so we need to give the whole person to God. And in so doing, then we even support our government as a Christian. And I think that's a good word. You know, it's hard for me to support our government sometimes, seeing the wickedness that they stand for. But that really helps me to allow myself to take a joy in the fact that I can follow what Jesus said. And so I'm thankful that he spoke to that matter. Yes? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So we obey God first, that's for sure. And I like it that you went ahead and brought that in the equation. You know, we follow the government so long as the government doesn't just oppose, you know, and their work, that their laws don't oppose God's law. And then at which point we have to follow God's law. There was a lot of argument during the COVID time as to whether, to what power the government had to come in and literally to shut down churches, you know. And I mean, come in and actually threaten legal action against you if you walked into a church building. They really usurped our Constitution to take on that kind of power. And it was an amount that the Constitution doesn't really give and allow for. There's still a lot of questions over that in court, and they're still trying to hash that out. Because do you realize that right now your president is trying to hand over all authority to the World Health Organization in times of disaster or medical crisis? And they just make that up, don't they, sometimes? And so who is in charge of the World Health Organization right now? China. So China makes the disease, China affects us with the disease, and then China comes and takes over because of the disease. Does that sound wise to anybody? So on that one, we will have to make sure that we follow God first, right? And so we tried to be careful in the way that we proposed that during the time of COVID, and we tried to stay open in ways that wouldn't look like we were just, you know, thumbing our nose at the government officials. But nonetheless, you know, even our parking lot services were strongly discouraged by officials in our area, and we just like, well, sorry, but we're going to go ahead and we're going to have them. And I couldn't see where being out there was any more dangerous than driving to Walmart. In fact, I thought it was less because we were more spread out outside out there than what people were being in Walmart, you know. And so there was a whole lot of stuff going on that was very interesting during that time. But some of our brothers in California took on some hefty lawsuits. Jack Hibbs was somewhat involved in one of them, but one of the Chino Hills Calvary Chapels literally had to go to court over it. John MacArthur was under fines of way over $100,000 and their church over $1 million, you know, just for showing up. And when they couldn't stop them from going in the building, they actually forbid them from parking in their parking lot. So people just parked down the street and they walked down to the building, and it just infuriated their governor. And he just went after them with such a just a vehement hatred. I know, it was terrible. Really disrupted his life, didn't it? Okay, so let's go ahead and go to John chapter 8, verse 36. All right, good job. We got it in stereo that time. You guys did awesome, man. Beautiful. All right. Yes, if the Son makes you free, you should be free indeed. The government can't even take that freedom away, can they? And so we live as free people no matter what. All right, Acts chapter 4, verses 19 and 20. Romans 6, 1 and 2. All right. And then 13, 1 through 7. There, it doesn't just say to Caesar either, does it? All right. Mm-hmm. That's good. All right, let's look at Galatians 5:1. Man, now verse 13 as well. Man, that's a good one, isn't it? I like that. All right, Philippians 3:20. First Timothy 2:1-2. I'm sorry. Man, go ahead and read the next one too. The next verse. All right. Even when we see corrupt leaders, what should we do? Pray for them. Who knows? They might give their heart to the Lord. They may be saved. All right, James 4:12. And 1 Peter 2:12-17. A good word, isn't it? We should be a good citizen. Why? Well, partly so that we can be a good witness of, you know, Christ's kingdom to others as well. All right, 3:11-17. That was a hard one for me to get my mind wrapped around. You know, generally, I felt better, like, if I got punished for something if I did it wrong. I didn't like to get punished if I didn't do something wrong. And this is saying you're actually better off to be punished for doing right than for doing wrong. And I guess God is helping me, like, grow in that thought, because ultimately I'd rather be right with God and still maybe incur some problem with the authority here than to be the other way around. You understand what I'm saying? Are you getting what I'm saying? I'd rather be accused of doing something wrong and then be wrong, even if I have to take on punishment, as long as my heart is right with the Lord on it. Anyway, that's a good word from 1 Peter there, because they were getting accused of a lot of stuff that they weren't doing. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. All right. And we're going to end with this last one from 1 Peter 4:12-19. That's going to conclude our study for tonight. Next time we meet together, we'll be in the family. And if you look at that one, it's got a bunch of scriptures to look up. So we'll be doing speed drills that night. So, thank you for being patient and going through all these together. It's been helpful to me. I've enjoyed seeing the collections of scriptures being read all at once, and it shows us how well-rounded the Bible instructs us in all things. And hopefully you've been edified by it as well. So do we have anything else before we close in a word of prayer? Shelly? Yeah, that's true. God has a reward for his people, and we just have to really look forward to that, even if we're being wrongly accused in this world, or if our government is working against God and they're trying to punish us in the process, you know. So God's got a bigger purpose. Have you guys heard of the movie called Jesus Revolution? Yeah, I'm hearing it's really good, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Life Mark is a movie about adoption, and it's a Kirk Cameron movie where he acts in it, just dealing with a young person's life while they're in their teens that had been adopted as a small child, and then there was the opportunity for them to know more about their biological parent and our parents. And it was a very touching movie, and it just makes a real beautiful statement about adoption and also just about life in general and how people can change as well. And so, yeah, that sounds great. If anybody would like to watch that with us, we could show that after the just kind of as a church fellowship thing. Yeah, celebrates life. It celebrates why do we have the opportunity, you know, why should we give the opportunity to even people that are being born into meager circumstances, you might say. You know, what can God do in that life? And so every life matters. And so I would encourage you, I watched the movie myself, and I cried. So you might want to bring some tissues for me. it was really good, though. It was really touching. I enjoyed it. But this other movie, Jesus Revolution, it's dealing with the time that's known of as the Jesus Movement, okay? And Greg Laurie's life is kind of one of the focuses. Have you guys ever heard him preach? He's an evangelist. And Chuck Smith, have you ever heard of Chuck Smith, anybody? He's the one who helped to found the church planting movement called Calvary Chapel. And John and Haley were actually part of a Calvary Chapel out in Virginia. It's a very biblically based church movement, and still planting churches today. A lot of them in California. They were some of the few that stood during the whole COVID thing too. Pastor Jack Hibbs, that I mentioned before. I don't know if you guys ever hear him on, you know, Facebook. There's a lot of short messages, and you can actually get on his thing and listen to whole sermons. He's a very sound preacher and pastor. So anyway, it just kind of deals with that whole theme, and I think why it's very interesting how God it works, isn't it? You know that all of that started, the Jesus Movement, with a revival at Asbury College or University. 50 years ago, 50 whatever many years ago, 1970. Isn't that crazy? 53 years ago. And it's all happening again right now on the very weekend that this thing comes out, this movie. I mean, it's just so incredible. God has such an amazing way of showing his glory. And I'll also add one more thing in there. These revivals that are happening right now are so particularly exciting to me, because we just saw the flaunting of evil at the Grammy Awards, didn't we? You know, if you watch, I don't watch the Grammy Awards, but I watched the aftermath of it with some Christian response to this ridiculous presentation that they had right in the middle of the Grammy Awards, and it was actually just a satanic worship is all it was. I mean, it was ridiculous. The kind of dancing that they were doing, and the individual who was the singer set him up as basically Satan, and he was above all of these that are worshiping him and carrying on. And I don't know, how many of you guys saw the halftime show of the Super Bowl? I didn't watch Super Bowl either, but I watched a little clip of the halftime show, and it looked almost similar to it with Rihanna. How do you say her name? Rihanna? I know, I'm thankful. I'm glad you didn't. I saw just a little clip through a Christian organization that was saying, does this look like what our family should be watching as their entertainment? And it was just like, that little clip was enough to just, you know, take me into a dark place. And I'm like, no, that doesn't look like anything that they should be watching. Mm-hmm. It is. And you know, it's so weird. They're like, exactly, it's the bondage of the devil, and the devil's trying to make it look attractive. You know what I'm saying? Well, so you had those two things happen, and God just said, watch this. And he starts like this nationwide revival, and it's just breaking out all over the place. And I'm like, yeah, that is even, you know, so much more amazing than what the devil's trying to promote, you know? And so I'm proud. I'm so proud to be a Christian during these days, because I'm proud of my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. He's awesome. And so you stand for him, and you'll never go wrong. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a good word. And you know, what I've noticed is whenever you tell people about like the thing happening here and there, there's all these folks that are on the outside of the Christian loop that are saying, how come we're not seeing anything about this on the news? The news is not going to report on Christian revivals. You know what I'm saying? There's a reason for that. That's not really their main reason for being there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's about you. It's all about self-promotion. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they don't tell you about the destruction, do they? Yeah. I had a person that was a self-proclaimed Satan worshiper that I was trying to witness to one time, and he said, yeah, well, I don't worship God, but I worship Satan. So I said, tell me a little bit about that. I mean, what is that? What do you really mean by that, that you worship Satan? And basically, he boiled it down to he was actually worshiping himself. And if you listen to paganists kind of explain what they're worshiping, it's a lot of self-worship as well, and that's just what Satan is basically trying to promote. Because if you get off on yourself, you're not going to be about God, are you? And he doesn't care any way that he can distract you from God. That's really his main purpose. Because that's where you can find salvation and freedom. Shelly? Mm-hmm. Emma, that's enough. Shelly, you need to deal with her. Emma, that's enough. You need to stop acting like that. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. The preacher went home. Yeah, he went home, and then the revival broke out. It was like, and it wasn't because of some really high, you know, performance type. Yeah, exactly. In fact, John's friend, Caleb, his brother-in-law is actually the worship leader there. And he was the one who was leading worship whenever all this stuff started happening. And he led worship for like hours upon hours. And it was like a miracle that his voice held up. He did it like several days in a row, 11 hours straight of leading worship. And it was never about him. You never heard his name, did you? You wouldn't even know it if I didn't happen to know his brother-in-law. What else? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's all about God and what he can do. He's the chain breaker, the way maker. He's the one who opens up the door. He's the one that's saving people. That he's the one that's setting people free. He's the one that's being adored. He's the one that's all it is, guys. There's no bells and whistles there. It's just, you know, the word is being lifted up. God's being lifted up. He's being praised. He's being adored. Sometimes they don't even have a music group, and they're just singing. The music group goes home, and they just keep singing in the sanctuary, and they just keep adoring God. And Caleb was saying that some high, you know, profile type singers went there and probably thought they'd be recognized and offered a place up front, and people just like, they just stood in the back. They weren't even recognized. Because you know what? Jesus is the point. And if we keep that attitude, you know, God will revive. We've been praying for revival for a long time, haven't we? God will do it. It's his desire to. And it may be in preparation for persecution that's to come. Might be the really what's happening, because we need to be encouraged to be real and to be right whenever we're challenged, right? And I can tell you the challenge is coming down the alley, because if you stand for biblical marriage and you stand for, you know, for the Bible being supreme, there's a lot of people that are ready to oppose you. And they may really have high positions. What do we have to worry about, though? We serve the risen Savior. And the church has been built on the back of the martyrs for many years, and that's how the seed of the church began. So, yeah, exactly. So, who would like to close us in prayer? Okay, Bill, go ahead.